Here's our series on aging in Portland. Retired or rewired? What it's like getting old in a youth-centered city. Are you up for that challenge? We'll bring you lots of views, but you'll have to answer this question for yourself. Is Portland a good place in which to grow old? What you're about to hear is a 7-minute version of a 30-minute show, prepared as part of a 20-episode series on aging in Portland. If you want to hear this entire show, or any one of the 20 episodes, you can do that at our website. We'll be doing this brief summary of each program in the evening news every Wednesday. Today, KABU is looking ahead to a time when you're getting old. Maybe you're already old. No, we know you're probably not old now. As one of our guests said, old is 10 years older than I am at this moment. This is the first episode in a brief series about what it means to get old, and specifically, what it means to get old in Portland, Oregon. We'll be covering the process of aging in Portland, and we have a specific area of interest. What does it mean to get old in a city that celebrates youth? Is it better to get old here by comparison to, say, getting old in Sacramento or Sarasota or Savannah? What does Portland have to offer the elderly? Is this really a city where one would want to retire? But first, some factual information, a little background from city demographer Uma Krishnan.
We have over 72,000 older adults in our wonderful city, and they make up about 12% of the city's population.
Big number and big share.
No, we are younger than the metro area. We are much younger than Oregon, and we are definitely younger than the country as a whole. And by younger, what I mean is our share of older adults is smaller.
Right. In our third episode, we'll give you a medical overview of the aging process from Dr. Mark Williams, geriatrician in Wilmington, North Carolina, author of the bestseller, The Art and Science of Aging Well, A Physician's Guide to the Process of Aging. He'll talk about some of the myths associated with aging and offer his recommendations for aging well, including ways to keep your brain young. Here he speaks on the challenge of managing our emotions as we age. Why is it important to manage your emotions as you age? What tools do you suggest we use to do that?
Well, I think that first off, aging is no refuge from an empty life. So by managing our emotions, I think a real powerful aging accelerator is keeping in negative emotions. It's kind of like if you keep negative emotions inside, anger, fear, grief, and you never give them an outlet, it's kind of like driving down the interstate highway with one foot stomp down on the accelerator and another foot pressed down the accelerator and the brake.
In episode 5, we talk with City Commissioner Nick Fish, a supporter of elderly interests for nearly his whole life in politics, about the city's vision for the elderly. We'll be asking the commissioner, is Portland ready for the demographic shift that it's facing? We spend some time on legal and financial issues of interest to the elderly, including the subject of the reverse equity mortgage. Here's Rachel Molaire.
Whatever amount is available to people, it's regulated, it's based on their age, it's based on the value of the house. They'll have that money available. The first thing it has to do is pay off any mortgage you have on the house. So if you have a lien or a mortgage, that has to go away. They have access to some cash. They can take it as a line of credit, which actually is a growth rate. They can take it as cash or they can take it as payments.
That type of mortgage can be very useful, but sometimes it sounds too good to be true. Here's attorney Chaz Horner of Eugene talking about credit issues in general and the pitfalls that we need to watch for.
It is a tactic very well established in the industry. You make the loan seem easy, and you mention only as much about the cost as the law requires you to. And you do it in the smallest print you possibly can at the bottom of the screen or in really fast words at the end of the radio ad. So, you know, whether really regardless of whether it's a loan, a reverse mortgage, credit card, even insurance products, it's just important to be very shrewd because the folks who are selling these things know what they're doing, and their one goal is to make sure that they are making as much money as possible off the credit offer.
According to figures from the Center for Disease Control, 1 out of 10 Oregonians over the age of 65 reports that they are in some stage of dementia. What does that mean? What is dementia? What forms does it take? And what, if any, are the treatment options? Fortunately, we have right here in Portland the Leighton Institute, a group at OHSU that works with patients and conducts research on Alzheimer's disease, an affliction that's become almost a signature of our time. Dr. Allison Lindauer talks with us in episode 14 on what we know of the origin of this disease, how we recognize it, and ways to care for it. You'll find out why Alzheimer's is, in some ways, a woman's disease.
Dementia is a women's problem. 2/3 of people with dementia are women, and 2/3 of the people that take care of those with dementia are women. So when a woman comes in, they'll typically come in with their mother, and they'll say things like, she used to be a really great cook, but now she can't quite make soup, or she can't even operate the microwave anymore, or she gets lost driving, and I'm worried about her.
In all the discussions of health and illness, there's often the unsung caregiver who carries the load. You may be or have been in that role, or you may see it in your future in some way. In episode 16, we meet Vicky Kind, a nationally prominent bioethicist whose writings on caregiving provide a guide for those difficult conversations and making the hardest family decisions. You want to hear Vicky make sense out of the most complex problems.
What we want to do is figure out, is the person safe? And an easy way that I explain this to families is, can your person connect the dots? Can they hold enough pieces of information together and remember all the details all at the same time so they can say, yes, that is a good idea, or no, that is not a good idea? So an example might be, can the person say, oh dear, there's a fire, I should leave the building, I should call 911? Those are all separate things that they have to think. It's not just memory, it's not just being, it's can they process, do they have what's called executive functioning?
You might ask, what's the future of aging? Won't there come a day when science will engineer indefinitely long lifespans, at least for those who want that and can afford it? To raise this question, we go to the world-famous AGED Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We'll talk with Julie Miller about research going on in Cambridge.
Here's what we know, Tom. The population of people ages 65 and older is expected to double by the year 2050. The population of people ages 85 and older is expected to triple by 2050. This is certainly the case in the United States and largely in many regions of the world. What this really unprecedented longevity means for both the United States and for so many other countries is that we are looking at disruptive demographics.
That's it for episode one. In the next episode, we'll be talking with Karen Brown Wilson, a national leader in elder care. This has been a 7-minute version of a half-hour show. You can hear the entire program or any one of the 20 episodes by going to our website, kboo.fm, and searching under the title Retired or Rewired. You've been listening to our series on aging in Portland, Retired or Rewired. Thanks for joining us today.